I'm so glad to have all of you here this morning. Isn't it gorgeous outside? Oh my goodness, thank you, Lord. Okay. Good morning, and thank you for coming to our Growing Healthy Marriages class. I want to extend a special welcome to any of our guests this morning. And one of the things I want to tell you up front is that the lesson is being recorded. And at the end of the lesson, of our presentation, we'll get Scott to stop the recording. And that's when then we will open it up to questions. And that way you don't have to be concerned about any question you might want to ask in the recording. We didn't want anybody to feel uncomfortable asking maybe any questions. We'll have those at the end. Come on in. Good morning. I know a lot of you, but for those of you that don't know me, I'm Glenda DiGiacinto. And currently, Amy Gambrell and I are serving the church family and community in a counseling ministry here at Eastside. Prior to arriving here, I was back in Texas, had a counseling practice there. Have any of you ever even heard of McKinney, Texas?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's where it was, and the name of my practice was Marriage Works. And I specialized in marriage counseling, depression, anxiety, and trauma. Recently, Christy Schwab, she's right back there. Okay. She gave me a copy of this book, The Marriage We Want. Well, she walked up to me and handed me this book. And you know, when somebody gives you something, what do? You say thank you. You know, and I thanked her. But I was also curious. It was Christy. Okay, why this book? What was it about this book that caused her to hand me this book? Because she could have given me any number of books. And it didn't take me long, so I listened to Christy's responses to hear just how passionate she was about this book. So I asked her, I said, all right, Christy, if I read this book and I like it, would you be willing to teach some classes with me? And she said, after some thought, she said, yes. And so after she said yes, I started reading the book. Look at all those tabs. This book's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started marking things that I thought were important to be sure and remember. Well, I got a lot of red. But I learned very quickly that the authors, Sheila and Dr. Keith Gregoire, they were very serious, and it was very important to them that their book be biblically based, which spoke to us too. We wanted that as well, and that it was research based. And that was important to us, too. And they did their own research. And so, after I read the book, I told Christy, yes, let's do this. And that's when we began to start meeting with a team of individuals to form this class. The other members of the team that are going to be talking to you this fall are Amy and Tim Schwab. He's going to be covering some material. He's got a topic picked out back there. And Andy, okay, he's going to be speaking. Eddie's wife will be talking with us too. Got lots of experience working with couples. And Brenda and Laura Chapman, we'll probably be hearing from them in December. I think it's going to work out with their schedule as well. So you've got a lot of different presenters and different teaching styles. So I think that we might enjoy that, having a variety. All along the way, I have been praying and asking for God's guidance and wisdom. To me, this is not just about our team's endeavors, but asking for God to use us as His vessels to grow and strengthen marriages. Last week, Christy gave an overview of the book and what it has meant to her on a personal level. Likewise, I want to talk to you at a personal level today by sharing with you what I experienced working as a counselor with couples as I cover chapter 1. It's an added goal of mine to focus more on what to do in a healthy marriage than what not to do. Because you see, many people already know what they don't want in a marriage. They're just not sure what to replace it with, or how to even begin to start changing long-held patterns of interaction. They can feel stuck, and they don't know how to get unstuck. Because the pattern plays out like a circle, he says this, and then she responds in this way, and then he says this, and then she says that, and then it goes from there. Okay? It's very predictable. And when couples are struggling, that can be a very unhealthy pattern of interaction. And if they could get out of it, if they knew what to do differently, they would do it. But quite often they didn't know what to do because they felt stuck in it. And that's when they would come walking, you know, into my office, and we would work on moving out of that pattern into a very healthy one. So that is why it's so important to focus on what healthy looks and sounds like in marriages. I and the other presenters this fall will share ideas. Anywhere you want to sit is just fine. We'll share ideas and information. We are not trying to point out that there's just one way to grow healthy marriages, because there are many healthy options that can be customized for a couple. So, a lot of options we'll be talking about. Knowing that information on growing healthy marriages could be just as helpful to couples in our community as to our church family, I want to encourage all of you to feel free to invite your family members, friends, and co-workers with you at any time this fall. And Sarah worked hard to get the banner out there that fronts Flint Ridge so we could invite the community. And she got that made for us. So thanks, Sarah. Now to get started on Chapter 1. It's entitled, The Unity You Want. The Unity You Want. The scripture that comes to mind for me when I think of a couple being united is the first one up on the board, Genesis 2:24. Therefore a man shall leave his father, you guys know this scripture, and mother, and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Marriage between a man and a woman is designed by God and intended to be the closest human relationship on earth. In a healthy marriage, a united couple needs to have a rock-solid foundation on which they can stand, and that foundation can only be God. I look to Matthew 22:37-39, where Jesus said, love the Lord your God, and you guys know this scripture too, with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Now there is a visual here that the authors use to demonstrate the scriptures I've been talking about, and it's this triangle where the two dots down here, these represent the spouses, and they're connected, and they're looking to God for guidance and wisdom. Now, the Gregoires, the authors, didn't come up with this visual. Actually, they even saw this visual, I think it's their premarital counseling, before they got married. So it's been around for, that concept has been around for a very long time. And as they look to God, God lays the very foundation for this marriage. And that's really, really important. Well, in my office back in McKinney, I didn't keep that on the board or on the wall in any way for my couple. But what I did have in the office was this. And this is symbolic of the same message on the board. So when they walked in, there was no doubt about where their counselor was coming from. And so now that I'm retired, that doesn't stay in a box. It stays on a piano to remind Bruce and me to do the same thing as a reminder to us. Now, continuing on. In The Marriage You Want, in that book, the authors wrote that, number one, we treat our spouse as we would want to be treated. And number two, we live a life of service within our marriage. Not because we have to, because we want to. Right? And they said, there, that's it. It's really that simple. That's how the triangle works. No problem. We've got some two seats together right back here. Right here on the side. Now, embedded in that message right off the bat, did you hear the golden rule? It was embedded, you know, from the get-go, right there. They said, we treat our spouse as we would want to be treated. The golden rule is found in Matthew 7:12. So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets. To grow a healthy marriage, please take a regular, often, and frequent, I don't know how I can say it in any more, you know, those variety of ways, but do it very often, an inventory with this simple question. Am I treating my spouse the way I would want to be treated? I hope you're asking yourself that question right now. Am I really doing it? If the answer is yes, keep it up. Good, you know, keep doing that. If the answer is no, please don't stop there. The next question to ask yourself is this. What do I need to do differently to be treating my spouse as I would want to be treated? Identify what needs to be different and get specific. I recommend that you actually make a list. Put the changes you need to make in writing and keep that list where you will see it on a regular basis. You are far more likely to make those healthy changes if you keep that list in your face. Be intentional about making healthy changes to your own behaviors. That is asking, what do I need to do differently, instead of, what does my spouse need to do differently? When couples came through my door, inevitably, the request was, please change her. Mm-hmm. Please change him. If you can do that, everything will be okay. Okay, that's not what this is saying. It's saying, look inward. But that was definitely the message. Just fix myself, and then our marriage will be okay. When you look inward, it can grow emotional intimacy and unity. When you do that, you are growing in the right direction to experience the gift God intended marriage to be. Now guys, I'm going to stop for a moment. And when I sat down at the computer to put to words what I wanted to talk to you about, Charlie Kirk is still alive. And today, as I'm talking to you, as you all know, he's not. And listen to what his wife had to say Friday night. I don't know if you've heard her speak or not. It was powerful. If you haven't, I would encourage you to do so. Listen to what she had to say. First and foremost, she came across very clearly, Charlie loved the Lord. There was no doubt about his commitment to the Lord. And then she said, every day, Charlie would ask me, what can I do to be a better husband? What could I do to be a better father? I had never, in all my years of working with couples, heard of a wife or a husband who did that on a regular basis. That's how. And an example of him really wanting to do all he could do to serve his wife. Willingly, not because he had to, because he wanted to, and to serve his children. What a, it's just powerful. Now, working in a school that Jason did this time, it had such a profound impact on me that I just had to talk to him. The authors go on to point out that marriage is about loving two people, yourself and your spouse. Both spouses matter. They point out that a marriage in which only one person matters is not a thriving marriage because it's not a true partnership. They relate a familiar story where one spouse gives in to the other spouse repeatedly. I have found that all too often, a spouse fears that a heated confrontation will occur, and so they choose to suck the feeling in an attempt to avoid conflict. not realizing this contributes to emotional distancing in the relationship. It's a common practice in my practice to work with couples to help them close an emotional intimacy gap. Because, number one, issues were avoided and never discussed in the first place, or two, their differences exploded and they were just tabled without finding any viable solution.
Mm-hmm.
Each time these situations play out in a marriage, there's this wear and tear on a relationship as they play out over and over. Mm-hmm. And watching where my hands are going, this represents the emotional intimacy gap getting bigger, okay? And this is as far as I can stretch, but it can feel like that emotional intimacy gap can be the size of a damn thing. It can be that big. So, in order to prevent this from happening, or continuing to happen to you, I have prepared a handout identifying good communication and conflict resolution skills that you can use to express your preferences, opinions, and your needs effectively, because you need to be able to do that. So, we could get these passed out. Amy, do you mind helping me with that line? Okay. Thank you. Copy those. We need more. I've got some. We don't want couples to feel like they need the stuff, what it is they want to talk about. So I want to give you some tools so that it can help. And these tools can help not just with talking to your spouse effectively, but to anybody. They work, you know, across the board. Do we need some more? Yeah. Okay. Are we good? Okay. Good deal. Thank you, Ginger. Instead of stuffing feelings, we want to be sure we've got the tools in our pockets to pull out and use them with confidence anytime we need to, so that we can share our ideas and opinions and needs in a very constructive way with each other. So let's look at the first bullet. When you want to address an issue, ask your spouse if this is a good time to talk. If it is, proceed. And if it is not, ask when it would be a better time to have a conversation. Do you hear how respectful that is? That just doesn't barge in on somebody's time and say, I need to talk to you next minute. It's very respectful and invites a conversation. The next bullet, be sure to identify the topic and stay on topic. Mm-hmm. Has it ever been where you start pulling in what happened 10 years ago that was never resolved? And let me tell you what your mom did and what this, you know. Okay, that doesn't work. Now, the next one, be absolutely sure that you are focused on tackling the issue and not each other. And by that, I mean this. Okay. Here you've got two spouses, here's the issue over here on the table, and they're looking at that issue, and together, they're tackling that issue like a team, rather than allowing that issue to come between them, and then they start tackling each other. And that's where the pain occurs, when they're tackling each other, and then it leads, you know, it goes downhill from there. So be sure you're tackling the issue and not each other. The next one's very important. Make a request, not a criticism. Embedded in every criticism is a request. So take time and ask yourself, what is it I'm really asking for, I'm really wanting? And package your words in the form of a request. And then it says, so ask for what you do want instead of what you don't want. Because if you say what you don't want, it's going to come across like criticism. I want you doing that in you know, hear that? So ask for what you do want. Requests increase the likelihood of finding a good solution. The next bullet, use I statements like, I am wondering if, number two, another one, I am thinking that, or number three, I could use your help with. You hear how they're gathering information, you know, and it's not confrontational, you're doing that? Avoid starting a sentence with the word you, such as, well, you never, or you always, because it will come across as criticism and go downhill from there. Drop the word why is the next bullet. Because it automatically causes the other person to go on the defensive. And you can end up in an adversarial role with each other. By asking the word why, it sounds like you've been called into the principal's office and you've done something wrong and you better explain yourself. Okay? Instead, let's just package your words with something like, could you tell me more about? And it see that sends a message of what you have to say is important. I really want to be sure I hear you. And I'm trying to gather more information. That is non-confrontational. Okay? And it's far more likely to invite a good conversation that's solution-oriented. The next bullet, be sure you are be solution-focused and not blame-focused. That's a big one, too. That means when talking with your staff, discuss what, I'd circle that word, what isn't working, and what could make it better, instead of who is at fault. Here we're looking for the what's and not the who. Okay, that's much more productive. And the last one, use a conversational level voice like what I'm talking with you right now, having a conversation. If emotions escalate and voices grow louder and stronger, that's the time to take away. Okay, for sure. Then self-regulate. Get it back under control, and you'll have some time to think. It might take just a few minutes, but then resume. Just because you take a break, that does not mean, okay, we're never going to talk about this again, which would happen a lot of times with couples because they take a break, but they wouldn't go back to the table. Does that make sense? Okay, and that can be harmful as well. So, I thought rather than me just trying to share this information, if you had a copy, maybe it might be helpful, or maybe you've got a friend or a family member that's struggling, and if you want to add something along, that's fine, but I thought I'd put it in writing for you. Each time you as a couple are successful in resolving issues, it can grow confidence that you as a team can do it again in the future, and that builds confidence in the couple. Now, ideally, when you walk through the front door of your home, you will experience an oasis in the outside world. And you're thinking, oasis, are you kidding me? We've got teenagers in our house. We've got little kids in our house. What do you? Okay, yes, it could be busy with small children or teens, but it's still an oasis from the outside world when the spouses feel valued, and they can share their hopes, their dreams, their fears, and day-to-day experiences with each other freely and without reservation. Knowing that their spouse is not only listening, but will find ways to be supportive. It also means that you can trust that what you have shared openly with your spouse will not be used against you. Because you have developed a relationship where it is safe to be vulnerable. You don't want to open up and then find out the next time you have a conversation, even if something comes back at you, you know, the spouse won't do that. That's important. When that exists, this is the kind of environment where unity, emotional intimacy, and sexual intimacy can grow and flourish. If either spouse feels afraid of saying or doing the wrong thing, kind of like they feel like they're walking on eggshells on a regular basis, unity, emotional intimacy, and sexual intimacy cannot grow and flourish when you're walking on eggshells. It just can't happen. If as a couple you are experiencing the situation and you're unable to change this unhealthy pattern, I highly recommend that you seek professional help to change the pattern of inaction. Please do not continue to do more of what isn't working. It only serves to make matters worse. Now, the authors of a book encourage couples to create what works for them, recognizing each spouse's gifts, their talents, their interests, their preferences, and their personalities, rather than relying on like gender roles or stereotypical roles. And let's get specific. Okay, I gave you an index card and a pen and pencil. Hopefully everybody's got one available to them. We've got more if anybody needs one. And here's what we're going to do with it. You get that card ready. And I'm going to ask you a question. And I'd like you to write your answer on the front of the card.
Can you read one card? Yeah. Be sure that
more. Nobody back there.
Okay. Okay. Or if you can share, there's a pen there. Okay. Very good. Okay. There we go. If you guys ever see me looking at the clock, it's because I'm trying to play beat the clock. I got so much to cover with you, and if that clock is moving way too fast. So forgive me if you catch me looking at that clock because I'm trying to beat it. All right, here's the question for the front of your card. What God-given gifts and talents does your spouse bring to your marriage? All right, list them all. If you need room, turn over and keep going. If you've got so many. Now, if you happen to be single at the time, take that same question and answer it as if you were married, because it's going to let you know what you're looking for in a future spouse.
So where did it again with that button line?
Right. All of the gifts and talents that your spouse brings to your marriage. What do they bring? While you're writing, I'm going to just talk out some examples. They might be patient. They might be spiritually strong. They might be kind. Supportive. They might be funny. They might have a sense of humor. They might be a leader. A strong work ethic. There's maybe lots of perseverance. Maybe they're gentle. Creative. A lot of financial expertise. Maybe they're a good cook. Maybe they've got a beautiful voice. Maybe they can play an instrument. Whatever it might be. And then after you fill that out, hold on to the card because you're going to be using it some more in a couple of minutes. And you just hang on to it after you get finished. A lot of gifts and talents in this group. They're having way too much fun. Okay. All right. Now hang on to those cards because I've got questions for the back of the card in a minute. But right now I've got something I want to ask for you to think about. This is the thinking one. Number one, have you been recognizing your spouse's gifts and talents by acting actively looking for the good in your stomach. Looking for the good in the stomach. Have you been doing that? And number two, and this is another one for you to think about. How often do you let your spouse know about the good you see in them? And number three, are you offering words of encouragement to your spouse? Remember, that could be verbally, but it also could be in writing. Sometimes when a spouse receives an encouraging note, he or she will hang on to it and read and reread it. And all of these questions could be summed up into one major question, and here it is. Are you lifting up your spouse to be all God created him or her to be? Are you doing it? If yes, by all means, keep doing it. That's great. And if no, resolve to start lifting your spouse up today and don't delay. It is powerful to be on the giving and receiving end of support. So I encourage you, lift your spouse up to be all he or she can be that God created them to be. Now, continuing on with chapter 1. In chapter 1, the authors approach the topic of love and respect, which is also the title of a book by Dr. Emerson Etheridge. How many of you are familiar with this book? Okay, yeah, it's been around quite some time. And in this book, Dr. Etheridge has a theory that men want respect and women need love. Well, the authors of this book, The Marriage You Want, they did their own research, and they came up with a different conclusion. They came up with that both men and women want to feel loved. Right? That they both want to feel loved. Well, really, in a healthy marriage, it is important to respect and love each other every day. Just every day. Both of them. Not one or the other. Both. Every day. So for that reason, I want you to take that index card, flip it over on the back, and I've got two statements I'd like for you to complete. And here's the first one. I feel respected when my spouse, and fill in the blank. I feel respected when my spouse, and fill in the blank. Okay, here's the second statement. I feel loved when my spouse, and then fill in the blank. Those are important statements. To be aware of what makes you feel respected and what your spouse is doing in that happens. Alright. Now, for those of you and your spouse is here, you can go ahead and exchange cards. And if your spouse is not here, then you can share it with your spouse later, what you did in here, and explain the card to them. And I thought you might enjoy seeing what each other had to say. And my hope is that what is written on your card will generate some great conversations today. And I'd love for all of you to experience what it is like to be on the giving and receiving end of love and respect, because it grows as it emerges. Even after church, and when you're in the car going home, there's still some conversations going about what's on that card. Now, continuing on in our book, the authors also bring up the topic of the husband having the final say when making decisions, an automatic unilateral decision-making style. Anybody familiar with that? Okay, one person. Automatic unilateral decision-making style is when, if there is a decision to be made, that the husband will make the final decision. Okay, probably some smiles. Okay. Some smiles as I look around the room. Well, the authors do not encourage this style of decision-making because they say it ultimately means that his opinion come across as being mattering and being more important than hers. In one of their studies, they took 20,000 women, and they found that 78.9%, almost 80% of the couples made decisions together, and their marriages did well. They also shared that they found when husbands made the final decisions all by themselves and on their own, the couple was 7.4 times more likely to divorce. And they then referred also to another well-known writer and author, Dr. John Gottman, in their book. And they said, and they pointed to a book that Dr. Gottman wrote, The Seven Principles for Making Marriage Work, that when a man is not willing to share power with his partner, there's an 81% chance that his marriage will self-destruct. Now, I'm happy to say that I did have a chance to train in a workshop with Dr. Gottman in Dallas when he came through. I was hoping his wife, Dr. Julie Gottman, would be with him, but she happened to be sick that with him when he was presenting in Dallas. And their institute, the Marriage Institute, is in Seattle, Washington, and they have done decades and decades of research, and they speak and they write books. The research is done nearby at the University of Washington, and so they were not, the Gregoires were not at all reluctant to use Dr. Gottman's name and his information. This happens to be the Gottman's book that I've used in my counseling practice a lot, 10 Lessons to Transform the Marriage. It's also, they have information on YouTube. You can pull them right up and find out more about that on YouTube if you would like to. Now, that being said, the Gregoires refer to a unilateral decision-making process, that's where the husband makes the final decision, as a shortcut that actually stops couples from growing and that it makes women feel unimportant and overlooked in their marriages. The author's studies reveal that women are 3.8 times more likely to be dissatisfied in their sex lives when their husbands make the final decision. In their research, they found that when couples made the decision together, women are almost 3 times more likely to report feeling heard when the couple has a disagreement. See, listening and feeling heard are really important components of growing a healthy marriage. Now, here's another important question. What is your spouse doing? What are they actually doing when you feel heard? They're listening. How do you know they're listening? What are they doing? Eye contact, one thing. When you really feel heard, they're making eye contact with you. They repeat back. They reflect what they think you said. They're checking to be sure they're getting it. Really important. Okay, I don't know where my cell phone is, but if I had my cell phone and Bruce is trying to talk to me, I've got my, okay, you put the electronics on, I'm off. Could be the TV, could be the phone, but they're giving you undivided attention. Okay. Yeah. The authors write that from their studies, when husbands and wives value each other's opinion, marriages thrive. That means they've really been listening to each other. Listening sends an unspoken message that what you are saying matters because you matter. Husbands and wives send unspoken messages to each other a lot. What unspoken message have you been sending by your actions? Be sure to send a lot of positive, unspoken messages through your body language. And if there is something that isn't working, take time to have a productive conversation. And it's common for couples to have issues they need to talk about. And it can be done in a solution-oriented, healthy way. The authors strongly prefer couples making decisions together, that it's the better way to address issues because it's a sense of teamwork. I want to share the form of collaborative decision-making that I use with my couples. And it's called the win-win method. And I'm going to send that out to you too. And I'm going to have time is just going to focus. Okay, we'll send some in.
there, and we're passing out this one.
Okay. I know some of you've got responsibilities you need to produce your service, and can you make your church service? All right. It won't take us long to go over this. It's pretty direct, self-explanatory. And this is a method of where couples work together and they've got an issue that they want to work on. And the first bullet I put there was write the issue here and actually put it in writing because it will help you stay on topic. Okay? Because it's easy to wander and get off topic. The next bullet, identify areas of agreement about this issue. Start out talking about what you already are in agreement about because it sets you up as a team addressing some additional issues to work on. But you want to enter this as a team. Then brainstorm for solutions, and that's where you write down and that's as many of your ideas as possible. Be creative and just write as many as possible. And then after you've exhausted that, then you evaluate the pros and cons of each of those ideas. Then it says select a solution to try. Once you've evaluated pros and cons on it, which one looks the best? Which one do we want to try first? And then ask each other, what will each of us do specifically to help reach this solution? And then finally, did the solution work? If so, keep it. If not, tweak it if you need to, or go back to the drawing board and pick one of the other solutions to try. But in caps, it says the main thing is do not give up. Strive for a solution that has components in it for both of the spouses. Right? And I have found this to be helpful. So I just wanted to, again, give you a copy. No, it's not in the book. That's why I made a copy. This is something that I'm using in my practice, but it's not in the book. Okay. From my experience working with couples, I believe there are many ways to grow emotional intimacy, and by working together, like on this win-win method, that's just one of them. And you've repeatedly heard me talk about the importance of emotional intimacy, and so I want to stop and ask you, what are some examples of when a couple is emotionally connected? What are they doing? What does that look like if a couple is emotionally connected? Sometimes they're touching. They might be holding hands. They might be being close to each other. There's just a physical presence with each other. What else? Feel seen and heard. Absolutely.
It's a lightness of playfulness and a lack of tension.
Absolutely, they're relaxed with each other. Absolutely. Okay. They know very personal things about them. What's their favorite color? What's their favorite food? How do they like their coffee made? Their spouse is a top priority. And it's conveyed. When you go to a restaurant, do you ever notice you've got two people there? They look like a couple together. They've got their phones up. They're not talking to each other, but they're on the phone. That's when they put the phones down and they're having a conversation with each other. They enjoy each other's company.
You point out, sort of joking, but serious. I remember when we got married on our honeymoon, there were several questions that we had, and multiple people go, oh, did you guys just get married? And it's because of a lot of what you're describing. Mm-hmm. No, and I haven't had anybody after that.
So true. Okay. All right. Here's another big question. And I've got to tell you guys that I have never said the word sex in front of a group before in all of my life in a classroom at church. Okay. So I had to think about this, all of this in a presentation. Of course I had to talk about it in my counseling practice, of course. But Sunday school, that was good. the really big one's coming. All right. Do you think it is possible to have true sexual intimacy, the kind God created, without having emotional intimacy?
No.
Okay. Without emotional intimacy, sex can become an obligation if it occurs at all. That is when couples need to back up and take a good look at how they've been treating each other outside of the bedroom. In this situation, a couple needs to ask themselves, what were we doing when we were emotionally close? This gives them a roadmap on how to reconnect emotionally again. Now, as they're talking to each other, they ask that question, and the answer is, we've never been emotionally close. That's important information, too. Really important. If you need to get help, please do not keep putting it off waiting until the 11th hour. It just makes it harder to close the emotional intimacy gap. I believe that emotional intimacy is needed to experience true sexual intimacy. There is a big difference between sexual contact and sexual intimacy in a marriage. True sexual intimacy means that the couple is so emotionally connected that there's just this outpouring of love that it just extends very naturally right on into physical intimacy. Okay, it just flows naturally.
I was listening to a podcast recently on Focus on Family, I think, and it said that women could handle, maybe should handle, or should have 12 non-sexual touches a day before they would feel interested in, yes. But I thought that was an interesting thing, like, whether that's just like,
Or a kiss or a hug.
Like, it was so intense. Like, wow,
12
or
13,
like, that's
just interesting. Yeah, non-sexual means affection.
Yeah,
we're showing affection. Right. And not expecting anything in return, just affection at that moment. Yeah, makes total sense. Okay? Now, when there is that natural outpouring right on into physical intimacy, to me, that is when couples are experiencing the gift. And I'm going to emphasize that word, the gift God intended for husbands and wives. Without reservation, the author sends this message. Be a team as you follow Jesus together, and you will find that is what leads you closer to the marriage you actually want.